Tuesday morning, I pecked on Cookie's front door, and as soon as I heard one of her kids say, "Come in," I shoved it open and stepped inside. It took my eyes a few moments to adjust. The farmhouse, with its awning-covered windows, was naturally dim inside and was made more so by the color scheme of the living room, dark grayish-blue walls and a dark stained wood floor, plus the fact that Cookie thought windows were made mostly to be covered up, first with vinyl shades, then with thick velvet curtains. Her son, Jetty, was lying on a rug, coloring. Her daughter, Kaylee, was perched on a chair texting somebody on her cell phone. Since she had gotten a cell phone for her 13th birthday, Kaylee had forgotten how to communicate with real words. She mostly grunted and nodded, but I figured it was a teenage thing. Maybe one day the aliens would return the real Kaylee and take this sullen, black-clad, metallically decorated clone back to space with them, and the little girl who used to wear bright colors and sing and joke and act human would come back. "Hey, Jetty," I said. "Howdy, Aunt Cupcake. See my magic duck?" He leaned back and beamed with pride. "It's beautiful," I said. "Here's for you. When I'm done with it. But if you want, I'll hang it on my fridge for you since Uncle Bob don't like pictures." "I would like that a lot," I said. "Thank you." I looked over at Kaylee, who hadn't even looked up since I came in. Every few seconds, some grating metal sound, substitute for music, would come from her phone, and she would go to hitting the keypad with her thumbs. "Hey, Kaylee, where's your mama?" "Huh?" Kaylee said. "Mom!" she called out in a bored nasal tone. When Cookie didn't answer, she nodded toward the bedroom. Not once did she look up or take her eyes off that phone. I stared at her for a minute and thought that maybe Bob was right. Maybe cell phones were addictive. One thing was for sure, Kaylee's entire social life depended on that gadget in her hand, and Bob wouldn't come into Cookie's house because there were cell phones, a microwave, and a computer in it. Cookie's bedroom was adjacent to the living room. I pecked on the door and she said, "Come in." Cookie was lying on the bed with a rag over her eyes. I knew she wasn't going to Mercy with me because she was still in her robe and gown. "Another one of your headaches?" I asked. She nodded. "Migraine. I don't guess I should go." "I'll take good care of him, sis. You know I will." "I know," she said. "It's just that, well, I can't go and leave him there. Not this first time." I placed my hand on her shoulder. After I went and settled him in, and then came back and told her that everything was fine, she would get her the nerve to go there. She sat up. "It's a nice place, though, don't you think?" "I do. And remember, if we don't like what we see, we'll move him out of there so fast it'll make your head spin." I knelt down beside her. "Don't you worry now. You hear? Everything's going to be okay." Before taking Uncle Fawcett to the home, I went over to his cabin to gather a few things, old photos and clothes. The nurse had told me that having familiar things around him would be a comfort to him. Uncle Fawcett's cabin lacked modern conveniences, but not for the same reason that mine and Bob's house did. He simply had no need for them. He never watched television. He whittled. The front door opened into a room where a white antique square table with four chairs sat in front of a bookcase that went from the floor to the ceiling. The bookcase was filled with little birds that Uncle Fawcett had carved over the years. Hundreds of little birds. I had always loved his carvings, but he never gave them away. He carved them and placed them on the bookcase. A box of wood shavings sat beside the chair closest to the shelf. I picked up one of the carvings and studied it, a hummingbird, exactly life-size, its wing details so intricate that Uncle Fawcett surely must have held one in his hand at some point. Maybe he had been a guide over at the gorge and developed a love for birds, or maybe he had always been that way. But I couldn't remember a time when Uncle Fawcett hadn't been obsessed with birds, especially chickens. Once he had told me that of all birds, he felt terribly sorry for chickens, because they were the most captive of all fowl kind. I stood there holding that hummingbird, remembering a morning when I was maybe 5 or 6 years old. Uncle Fawcett had come to visit on his vacation from where he had worked at the gorge. He had gone out to help me feed the chickens. "See them chickens, little girl," he said to me. "Them chickens is the saddest of all the birds on this here planet." "Why?" I asked. "Well," he said, "you take a buzzard. That there buzzard flies wherever it wants to, eating all the dead stuff it can get its beak on. And it's a happy life. Well, you take a hummingbird. Why, that little feller spends all his days flitting around from flower to flower. But a chicken, a poor old chicken, she's got wings, but she can't fly worth a nickel. So she don't feel like a true bird. And she has to live in a chicken pen and waddle around on the ground. She spends her whole life down there in the dirt, and she never knows what it feels like to soar or to land up on top of a barn roof. A chicken is the most pitiful of all birds." "Well, what about roosters?" I asked. "Only thing sadder than a chicken," he said, "is he goes around bragging and crowing about his misery because he's a damn fool and ain't got enough sense to know it." I put the hummingbird back in the box I brought to collect some things. I chose a couple more birds from his shelf before I left the living room, which did not look like a living room at all. Uncle Fawcett had no sofa or padded seating of any kind. He said that all the important things a man could do could be done at a table, whittling, eating, and once in a great while talking with a friend. Beyond that room, off to the right, was an open doorway leading into a kitchen area where there was a wood-burning cook stove, a table with water buckets, and kitchen cabinets. There was a small round table and two chairs in that room, and beyond it, another door led from that room onto a screened back porch, which faced my trailer. From the kitchen, I took nothing. So I went back through the living room and into my uncle's bedroom, where I found his simple quilt-covered bed. The quilt was a crazy quilt that his wife had made at least 40 years ago. I decided that nothing could make him feel better than sleeping under that piece of art that Eleonora had so lovingly stitched together. I took several photographs from the dresser and some clothes, mostly pajamas, from his drawers. I ventured into the last room of his small cabin, the only room I had never been allowed to enter. On the back wall of Uncle Fawcett's bedroom was a door. He kept it bolted. I lifted the bolt and entered, my heart racing, not knowing what I'd find or what to expect. But Uncle Fawcett was incapable of making decisions on his own right now, and I needed to know everything that might be of a help to him, including what was on the other side of that door.